Welcome back to Halfwits and Failed Crits. I've got with me Kylie.
I play Malara, a elven druid.
Mary.
I'm Adriel, tiefling assassin.
Laura.
I'm Anya, a wood elf ranger.
And Louise.
I'm Nixtern, a half-orc mercenary fighter.
And I'm your dungeon master, Jonathan. We're back for episode 2, where we are still recapping some of the games that we never recorded. This was a campaign that we started playing before we ever got audio equipment. And around episode 11, we end up start recording, and that's where we'll kick you guys off after the next episode. This episode, we're recapping our games 4 through 7, so 4 different games for you. And then at the end, just like last time, we're going to have a little bit of a conversation afterwards. And yeah, I think we're ready to go. So who has game 4?
I do.
Nice.
All right, so game 4 was titled The First Rift. Our party awakens in an incredibly hungover state on the shores and cobblestones of Tinnik Village, after a long night of partying with the Onyx Rose. Groggily, they dragged each other back to Tree Tower, where they found Isaac waiting with news from the National Guild Hall. It was a quest board, and it had been installed overnight with information on how to rank up as a guild, recruiting more members, expanding our guild land, and collecting more guild coins through the quests that were posted. The party sobers up and heads out to Hollisted Marketplace to gather information and hopefully recruit some new members. While talking to the different merchants and learning more about how the City of Guilds functions, Adriel sneaks off to use her criminal connections to try and get some more like-minded individuals to join up. Per usual, the role was a failure, and she was approached...
Rude! So rude!
And she was approached not by a criminal, but an old homeless dwarf looking for a guild to make a few coins. His name was Ebron, and it turns out he was also a skilled gardener, which the party decided was close enough to landscaper to warrant bringing him aboard for the guild's land expansion. Just then, a large yellow cloud fills the sky, emanating from the National Guild Hall headquarters. The streets were thrown into a panic as everyone dropped what they were doing, donned their guild colors, and ran for the hall at the center of the city. Nixtern and Kef take the chaos as a sign they should start fighting and attack a large red dragonborn, a leader of the Red Oath, and owner of the Dead Skull Pub. Needless to say, the syndicate was no longer welcome in that establishment. They took it in stride, though, as Hollisted was in no short supply of drinkeries. As everyone poured into the guild hall, wizards raised the interior courtyard into an elegant platform just above the heads of the masses. Malara notices an imposing female with a small, glowing pseudo-dragon, not paying any mind to the assembly. On the platform stood 3 regal figures, an Arakokra, a drow, and a dragonborn. Kasmina of the Onyx Rose finds the party in the crowd and explains that they are Gelleron, Nim, and Eryxia, respectively. Kasmina hushes the crowd as Grandmaster Gelleron begins to speak. We were heroes of... Oh, wait.
We were heroes of the Great Rift War, and now we are your grandmasters. We created the Kingdom of Hollisted to train the best adventurers in all the land. In return, we ask that when the occasion presents itself, your guilds take on the task of the continued defense of the country of Aspasia through the remnant rifts and their monstrous invaders. When we sound the alarm you heard today and light the fires that filled the sky with smoke, you are to respond to the rift threat by coming here and retrieving your orders, stationed behind you and organized by guild rank. The threat today is standard, but as always, time is not a resource we have to waste. Go forth, close your assigned rifts, and return for your payment.
The grandmasters and crowd raise their fists and chant, Ignis Vocus Nas. Immediately, the guild lines up to retrieve their orders. The syndicate is tasked with closing a minor rift in the Bysage Swamps, a few hours' travel south of Hollisted. On their way, the heat gets unbearable and slows them down. The slower they walk, the thicker the swamp feels on their legs. In the distance, a small, translucent, and colorful specter appears by a bush. And as Anya goes to inspect it, she steps right into a rope trap that hangs her upside down from a tree. The party is surrounded by swamp elves who put up a poor ambush while everyone else rolls good perception checks, and they were quickly dispatched. Nixtern takes the lone survivor and intimidates them, while Adriel cuts down Anya. Malara asks some questions about the location of the rift and what that creature is. The elf doesn't know, and their head was quickly added to Nixtern's belt. On further inspection of the small spirit, it seems like it was a projection of sorts, and every few milliseconds, it looks like all of its lights were being dragged to a point in the far distance before returning to the same spot mere moments later. This would be coined as rubber banding by the party, and they followed the creature's light trails to a clearing surrounding a large pit. At its bottom were hundreds of these small spirit creatures, all rubber banding to different locations, all different colors, all connected to a definitive central point. And as the syndicate sat and observed, they noticed the spirits were becoming more and more tangible. Not looking to find out what happens when they reach full opaqueness, Anya shoots an arrow at the central point and crits. Go, Anya. The ground at the bottom of the pit begins to crack and shake, the spirits accelerating the rubber banding wildly until a small ring was clearly in the center. Then it started growing rapidly. This would be their first rift.
Yay.
The syndicate jumps down the pit fighting the small rift spirits as they descend, but as they reached the bottom, they realized they weren't quite quick enough and the pit was deeper than they had anticipated. The rift was larger than any of them, and slowly from its center came a gaping, translucent maw pointing to the sky. As it protruded from the rift, Nixturn decided that this was trouble that they would not be able to handle, and grabbed each jaw, using all of his strength to attempt to force it back down from whence it came, all while the others unleashed a salvo of attacks against its ever more tangible scales. Just as the creature was about to pry itself free from Nixturn's grip, a booming voice yelled for him to stand back. A hulking paladin in shimmering white with orange trim and a purple guild sigil and cape slams their shield down on top of the mouth, instantly drilling it back beyond the portal. The syndicate made quick work of the remaining small spirits as they watched this knight in shining armor damage the rift, forcing it to close.
Wow, that was not meant for new guilds. You all did well fending that thing off
this
until I was able
Norian
to
sounded.
Arrive. The name's Norian, guildmaster of the first paradigm. Run along and collect your reward from the guild hall. This rift is on me, newbies.
Fuck that guy. His sickening, sweet, and heroic grin didn't sit too well with the syndicate, but on return, they did get their reward. As they waited for the clerk to come back with their coins, Malara noticed a ledger board hanging prominently in the atrium. The first paradigm sat comfortably on the top in a city bursting with skilled adventurers. The syndicate had a goal. Beat that smug grin off Norian in the first paradigm. I like that I made him sound like a doofus.
It was not what Norian sounded
yes.
like.
Yes, it is. It's canon now. It's recorded.
What
no.
was he supposed to sound
yes.
like?
I haven't played Norian in so long.
Good. I hate that guy.
Give me the lines.
Wow, that was not meant for new guilds.
Fuck
you
this,
all
dude.
Did well defending that thing off until I was able to arrive. The name's Norian, guildmaster of the first paradigm. Run along and collect your reward from the guild hall. This rift is on me, newbies.
Fuck him.
I think it sounds exactly the same.
Me too, actually.
Pretty spot on. That was the recap of episode 4. We're on episode 5, which is going to be read by Mary.
Game 5, Light of the Night. Our heroes begin their day offering to help Isaac the Navigator check out some of the ruins. Nixturn refuses to wake up, so they head on without him. Unfortunately, that involves climbing. Adriel cheats, as I would, and just flies up. While Malara struggles so much, Anya and Isaac have to help her up with a rope. The first ledge has a cave where Malara and Adriel pick up plant samples, wildflowers and mushrooms. Here, Malara surprises everyone by climbing to the next ledge first.
Woo!
There's a deeper cave on this ledge, and they decide to explore. The next room has a skeleton with a shiny opaline crystal that Adriel takes. Continuing on, Anya... Wow, Lewis, can you please turn that off?
Please keep it down in the peanut gallery.
Bilbo got startled.
Sorry, Bilby.
I'm literally sitting half on top of him because he just decided that my legs didn't matter. So now they are draped over him because I have nowhere else to put them.
Oh, Bilbis. Anya rips... Anya trips on stalagmite.
Anya rips one.
Anya trips on the stalagmite and a dripping noise starts. Adriel notices a weird jelly mass and ochre on the ceiling of the cave. It drops onto Anya and then consumes her. Adriel sets it on fire, as she does, and Malara casts a create water spell to put it out. The ochre tries to run away, with Anya still inside, but Malara casts a poison dart and kills it. They meet back up with Isaac on the third ledge, where they take a well-earned short rest, and Anya tries to get ochre goo out of her hair. Adriel and Isaac examine Adriel's gem, while Anya and Malara examine the cliff face. Anya notices what looks like a steam on the rock. A steam on the rock. English. Okay. Anya notices what looks like a seam on the rock, but nothing happens when she pushes it. Malara finds a funny-looking rock, and when she goes to pick it up, it depresses and a 6-inch doorway opens in the cliff face. Malara reaches in and finds a small owl figurine and puts it in her bag. Klepto. Our adventurers continue their climb, where Malara manages to fall off the cliff. Luckily, Adriel catches her. Those wings are pretty useful. And everyone makes it up to the top. Past the beautiful sunset, the ruins spread across the top of the cliff. There are mostly small walls and posts, no buildings here. Anya goes to look off the other side and sees the rest of the mountain range and a path with some camping sites. Malara looks at the foundations and notices one spot that is more worn from use than the others. Adriel notices the ruin is in a defined circular shape, and Isaac explains that he doesn't think these were buildings that were lived in. Malara shows him the worn wall and fails trying to push it. Isaac comes to the rescue, and together they're able to push the wall. They realize that there are wear marks on the ground and around the other wall sections that indicate they can all be moved. There are 10 pieces total, and the group manages to move them to complete the full circle. Adriel goes to the center of the circle where there is a short pillar and an opaline core. Adriel places the crystal she found on top, but nothing happens, unfortunately. I remember this game being incredibly frustrating.
Yep.
And this recap is making it sound like we very logically figured this out. When I remember we did not.
My notes had like each step that we took where we moved things and then moved them back. And I was just like, fuck that. No one wants to listen to that. I'm just going to spark note it. In retrospect, it probably shouldn't have been that hard. We just made it hard.
Well, yeah.
No, it was kind of difficult.
Kind of. Thanks, sweetie.
So after Adriel tried to place the crystal on the top of the core, but nothing happened, Malara tries the owl figurine, and again, nothing. Adriel then sits on it, but slides right off.
Did you forget that?
A+ effort. Wow. Good job. Anya cuts her finger and dribbles some blood on it. Nothing happens then either. Adriel then realized Malara said it looked like a sundial and realized that she is reflecting off the movable door, so the pillar is in shadow. They move the doors around as the sun sets, hopefully thinking that they're onto something. Just before the sun disappears, they get the doors just right, and the light is set onto the circle. The pillar continues to sparkle after the light fades. Everyone but Adriel touches the pillar and realizes that it fills them up with a warm, happy feeling. Adriel begrudgingly touches it as well, and as soon as she does, the vines around it fall away. Streaks of light appear on the pillar, shooting up to mimic a constellation in the sky. Malara recognizes it as the constellation's small crown, but then realizes that she cannot see the big crown constellation. The light begins to take shape as Adriel and Anya back out of the ruins. Malara and Isaac stay inside the circle as the light forms the shape of a woman. She thanks us for freeing her and that it has been many years since she has seen the world around. She offers us one of three things, fame, fortune, or friendship, but we can only pick one. Malara suggests friendship. Isaac is too dazed to function, and Anya also votes for friendship, and Adriel just says fine.
I literally had that in quotes, fine.
I assume I was tempted by the fame and fortune as well as
yes.
Your lovely friendship.
Mm-hmm.
As the group makes their decision, the glowing woman's eyes glistens with tears as she is sucked back into the pillar, which then proceeds to shatter. Where the pillar used to lie is a woman who looks remarkably like a glowing figure. Adriel offers her a set of extra clothes as the woman comes to. She tells the group her name is Bodhi and that she has been trapped there for so long because no one had ever picked friendship.
Poor Bodhi.
Yeah. It's a good thing it wasn't just
Adriel. You mean? Yeah. Yeah, she never would have gotten out of there.
It's a good thing Louise never showed up to that game.
Listen, right, that pillar would have just been destroyed.
You have to play how your character is designed, right?
Correct.
And luckily, the evil was outweighed by the good in this particular instance.
Mm-hmm. Since no one had picked friendship, that means that thousands of people had either picked fame or fortune instead. Malara then asks if she wants to be their friend and join the guild. She tells the crew she used to be a princess, but her family was usurped and that she was trapped in that pillar. They camp there for the night and then return to Tree Tower to introduce their new friend.
Nice.
Woo.
Aye.
The whale.
We'll talk about that later, but no.
It is the whale, right?
No.
It is the whale.
It is not. Just for reference, it's a literal whale that we
It created. Is a literal whale.
Okay, so next reading, chapter 6, we have Laura.
This is called Game 6, Down the Rabbit Hole.
The day starts out with an impressive carriage with National Guild Hall banners pulling up to the gates of Tree Tower. One of the upper guild management people has brought a new member, Bradley Uppercrust III, a rock gnome paladin who heard that this was the best guild in town. Honestly, that sounds kind of unlikely.
I was going to say like you should have, but that's fine.
He was lied to.
We go to introduce Bradley to the other guild members and realize Ebron the gardener isn't anywhere to be found. The area he was working in has a sinkhole and it looks like he fell. Nick's turn throws Bradley into the hole, but forgets to grab the end of the rope Bradley held to keep him from slamming into the bottom. Adriel, Malara, and Anya jump in after him, hit water, and continue to fall through it. Nick's turn attempts to make the hole bigger so he can actually fit, but he plugs it up when he jumps in.
And you got a big butt.
He eventually squeezes through and falls into the pit with the others. They follow the promise of light at the end of the dark tunnel and find what looks like a giant underground cavern with lush plains and elegant buildings. The roof of the cavern is held up by beautiful pillars. Across the plain, our adventurers can see some strange creatures approaching. As they draw near, they realize that the creatures are large, almost 5 feet tall, bipedal rabbits. They speak common but don't understand a lot of human concepts. Bradley mentions some underground nations in his religious text. The rabbits lead the group toward their city, where our heroes begin to notice how weirdly happy all the rabbits look. Are they going to be eaten? They also notice the rabbits seem rather hesitant to tell them anything about where they are going. Nick Stern, not understanding or caring about the rules of social etiquette, asks their rabbit guide if they ever bathe. Malara, tapping into
I use it twice?
Kylie wanted to use big words in this for some reason, so she did.
Malara, tapping into unrealized knowledge, spouts off rabbit facts about how they cannot...
Now all the listeners are going to say unrealized?
Kylie and her giant unrealized word.
Fuck
you. Heretofore. Malara, tapping into heretofore unrealized knowledge, spouts off rabbit facts about how they cannot regulate their body temperatures, so being submerged in water could be potentially fatal. Eventually, our heroes arrive at the castle and are led inside an entrance that doesn't appear to lead to a dungeon. Anya explains to the rabbit guide what kind of creatures we are, since they don't seem to know anything about the upper world. Nixter notices that there are rabbit guards in what appears to be stone armor, and he definitely wants some. The group also notices that the rabbits seem...
Unrelated to the armor. Just definitely wants some.
Oh, no.
That's for another episode.
It's later. It happens later.
The group also notices that the rabbits seem to be able to communicate with each other silently through ear movements and other body signs. What might they have been saying about our adventurers before now? When Malara asks about magic, the rabbits say they have sorcery, which enables them to mold the rock and earth. That's how they created these castles. They take the crew to the infirmary to heal any injuries, and Malara notices that they are using magic to heal as well. Rolling a natural 20, she shapeshifts into one of them to try to blend in and get a better look around. But they put a hospital bracelet on her for easy identification. Bummer.
Boo.
They then guide the group to a back room, where it appears that rabbit nobility are playing leisure games. Anya introduces everyone and asks about Ebron. The rabbit leader, Gerald, says that they have not seen a dwarf like him, but they will send guards to look. Adriel, with a particularly good perception roll, realizes that the rabbits are lying and something isn't quite right. She tries speaking in Infernal and notices the rabbit's ears twitch and guesses that they must be able to understand Infernal, which is a really strange language for rabbits to be able to understand, even anthropomorphic rabbits. The rabbits attempt to lead us back to where we entered, but Bradley suddenly senses a small orb emitting a fiend-like aura from back inside the castle. Nick Stern is able to distract the rabbit guides by asking to see an armory to buy some of that stone armor, and while at the merchant's booth, Malara signals Anya to cause a commotion. Adriel launches into the air, drawing the attention of the rabbits, and Malara rips the hospital bracelet off and eats it, slipping unnoticed into the crowd.
I forgot I
so
ate it.
Snack for later.
Or snack for now.
While Anya, Adriel, Bradley, and Nick Stern fight some super-sized guard rabbits, Malara slips into the castle, convincing the guards at the entrance to go into the commotion. She continues into the castle, seeking the fiend orb, but runs into one of the royals, who asks her what she is doing. She tells him about the commotion outside, but he reminds her that there's nothing he can do about that since they're just stand-ins. Realizing that something is definitely fishy, Malara attempts to charm him, but fails, and just barrels on past him down the corridor, casting water behind her to stop any pursuers.
Water wall. Like Wonderwall, but of water.
As she gets deeper into the castle, Malara realizes the castle's becoming more and more shabby and run down. What's going on here? The exterior looks so well kept. While Malara ponders this revelation, the rest of her friends continue to wreak as much havoc as they can before Anya casts fog and they slip through the unguarded entrance to the castle. As they approach the water wall Malara left behind, they see some of the rabbit guards trying to get through. As they get frustrated, they hulk out into the giant rabbits they were fighting in the courtyard. Nick Stern, having experience with were-creatures, suggests they hide. Bradley manages to find a small door leading to a bunch of tunnels, and the group enters to try to find another way past the were-rabbits. Meanwhile, Malara comes to a dungeon, where she casts detect magic and sees all sort of floating conjuration orbs. Malara walks over to a cell and sees a fairly large human female sitting there, talking to the orbs. Malara asks if she has seen a dwarf, and the woman responds that he's a couple cells down. Malara rushes over and finds Ebron. He doesn't know how he got here or how he got out. Luckily, the rest of the party show up, and Malara lets them know it's really her so she doesn't get squished by Nick Stern's fists. Nick Stern busts down the doors to the cells, freeing Ebron and the woman. She says her name is Xenia, and her god, that she calls Futhark, told her to wait there for a sign, which apparently was us. The happily reunited group begins freeing the rest of the prisoners with the help of Ebron and Xenia, then begin their perilous escape from the were-rabbits. Using all the best tricks in their books, the intrepid crew take out the large stone pillars supporting the cavern roof, causing it to start collapsing on the were-rabbit realm as the syndicate and the freed prisoners escape back to the surface. Now free, three of the former prisoners decide to join the guild. Mosos, a gnome, Amche, a human, and Nyla, an Arakokra. Xenia also decides to stay. Good thing, too, she is able to create some pretty impressive and destructive tentacles. As the group returns to Tree Tower to settle in for the night, Malara notices a few of the books in her library are glowing. They are books on transmutation magic left behind from when the wizard-turned-goat lived here. Perhaps that's what the rabbits were after? Could there have been a way to reverse the were-creature curse? Guess we'll never know.
Awesome. And now we're on to the last summary of the episode from Louise.
Game 7, The Whispervale Estate. After the monstrous events of the last adventure, Anya spends some time at the tavern in Hallstead, where the National Guild Hall is. She starts chatting with some of the members of other guilds who are complaining about how the First Paradigm, the top-ranking guild, always seems to know where other guilds have been assigned to close rifts, swooping in and stealing all the glory. How do they always know? With the dawning of a bright new day, our fearless adventurers check out the quest board to see what's available, but find that numerous quests have been changed or expired, so they head into Hallstead to get new postings. One of the Grandmasters, Galeron, explains that the difficulty of quests has changed, but as our guild has been growing faster than any other, he will allow us to give a harder quest a shot. He explains that the quest that was once an extermination mission for supernatural pests has become a rescue mission. A lower-level guild set out to tackle this quest several days ago, but have not returned. The syndicate accepts the quest, but with the promise of rank 2 as a reward, and set off toward the manor on the outskirts of the city.
Is this where we kill that old lady and steal her gold?
What?
What? Wow, spoiler alert.
Our adventurers approach the manor through a looming archway, the words Whispervale Estate carved into the stone. Inside, they can see shambling figures that look like zombies. They don't seem to notice when Bradley hits one in the head with a rock, but they turn to attack when Kef gets too close. Malara asks if they can understand us, but when she tries to say the word understand, it vanishes. The zombies pause at the missing word, but then return to their frenzied state, and Adriel realizes that there's something unnatural with the language issues. Could it be magic? Anya guesses that the longer we're here, the more we'll forget, and the more like the zombies will become. Everyone runs for the door of the manor, pushing past the zombies. Once inside, Adriel writes down all our names, our mission, and some personal things that may help us remember things if we forget. Bradley is able to sense evil everywhere, so of course, Nick's turn tries to make a Ouija board. Spoiler, it's really bad. It's not very effective. We start forgetting more and more words, zombie, heal, evil, die, which make it a lot harder to communicate what's happening. The group finds a dining room where there is a full meal laid out, but it's not moldy or anything, which is surprising considering the state of the manor. Bradley and Kef stupidly eat some food, and when Bradley tries to say that he doesn't feel any different, he actually says he does. He quickly writes down what happened, and that doesn't change. Kef vomits up the food, not wanting to be possessed, but he forgets the word. Off the dining room, the group finds a hallway with a room at the end, and each person sees a different room on the other side. Since they don't know which is the real room, Malara tries to look through the doorway with a mirror, but it fogs up. Then the fog clears and they see a dungeon. Tired of all the mind games, Nick's turn tries to smash a window, but can't, and take a guess that maybe the entire second floor is an illusion. We head to the basement where we find a huge labyrinth. Anya sends Pants to scope out ahead and communicate what he sees. First up is a storage room, where Malara takes two volumes sets of the history of the manor. A quick read shows that the original owner of Whispervale Manor was a collector of all sorts of things. Strangely, a floor plan of the manor only shows the ground floor. The crew just starts going through doors, and as they progress, a haze begins to form, but it doesn't seem to like fire. As they enter one room, three figures materialize from the haze. Nick's turn charges with his torch, and they disappear and rematerialize in front of the door the group came through. The group manages to injure one of the figures and remembers the word die. So it seems these hazy figures have something to do with the language we're forgetting. The group runs through the next door and are greeted by a massive hazy figure sitting on the floor. Its only discernible feature is its mouth. We ask if there are other people have come here. He says yes, and that we met them outside. We realize that the guild we were sent here to save are fucking goners. The creature tells us he feeds off people's words, and that's why we've been forgetting them. Malara goes to throw a fireball at him, but Anya stops her and asks him about the person's name written on the paper. He tells her it's her mother's name, but she can feel that something is wrong, like maybe he's lying. Adriel thinks that if we feed it lies, maybe we can trick it, and everyone starts telling outrageous lies. When that doesn't work, everyone fires on it, but it seems like all it's doing is getting annoyed. Nick's turn gets the bright idea to try to hurt it from the inside and gives Bradley the torches, then throws him into this creature's mouth. When he enters its form, everyone forgets him. I'm sure it was a good idea at the time, but I feel like reading it.
Your first go-to is to just pick up someone and throw them at the monster. Yeah.
Right, and it's almost always Bradley because he's the little one. Work?
Yeah,
it worked. Worked. Quite has enough. Quotation marks around it.
Realizing the creature isn't just erasing language, but memories as well, the group tries to see if feeding him a false story will somehow corrupt him. Nick's turn tells a story about an idiot ghost he met on a battlefield, but there isn't enough detail to do anything. Anya and Malara read the figure the story of his life from the book they found, and Kef creates an illusion of the woman he loved, and Malara sets it on fire. The figure tries to take her words, but can't because she's an illusion. Bradley prays to his god, good thing to do when being ingested, and his god tells him that the words are power, so someone has to find the word that is both important and will make him forget. Thanks, DM. Kef gives it a shot, but gives a false memory so it doesn't work. Malara tells the story of failing the most important test of her life and how she realized that knowledge wasn't the most important thing, and the figure starts to go haywire and deflates. Everyone feels a rush of energy as all the words and memories we had forgotten come flooding back in. The creature disappears, and suddenly everyone remembers Bradley, laying on the floor covered in slime. We also feel memories that weren't even ours flooding out of him and returning where they belong. We run outside and see the zombies being released from their trance and fading into the afterlife. The memories were not enough to hold them to life. As they fade, the group hears one of the zombies say something about his guild. At least we know exactly what happened to that other group adventurer. The group, sensing no more evil around the manor, gather up the guild members' bodies to return them to the guild hall for proper burial. Galeron gives us our reward, even though it wasn't the outcome he had hoped for, and declares the syndicate to officially be a level 2 guild.
Woo!
Woo!
Yay!
Okay, what are some things that we want to talk about these last few episodes? I have one right off the bat, and it's Bodhi isn't a whale.
Yes, she is.
Bodhi is a whale.
It's canon now.
Bodhi's definitely a whale.
100% a whale.
Luis wasn't even there at that event, and he comes back the next day, or no, it was a few events later, and he's like, who's this Bodhi chick? And somehow gets it into his head that she was a whale.
A sentient whale.
A sentient whale.
Yep, yep.
It was
That's how it was described to me. I definitely remember.
No, it was like...
She was a giant.
Yeah, she's a giant, but she was like a celestial almost. Like there was a weird... I think because she was like glowing and she like sort of became a constellation. And when we tried to describe her, you just kind of went, so a whale. And we just kind of went, sure.
Oh, yeah, that is how that came about. You guys were like making descriptions and I'm like, you described something that could definitely have just been a whale.
And then
it became a whale, Kanan. What are some other things that people want to talk about from those last four events?
I was really, really sad. I think it was this game number six, the were-rabbits one that Laura read. I cannot think of a moment in this entire campaign that I was more proud than when I made a kill shot on a monster. And I think it was this game, and he left it out of the synopsis. And I'm very upset.
I'm sorry. There was a lot of shit to get through in that episode. I hit the highlights.
I forgive you.
Also, for our listeners, we started this game back in October of 2017.
Yeah.
So these games are a little bit hazy for some.
Very
people.
Fuzzy.
It's January 2020 now.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah.
I was like, rabbits what now?
Right, what? I know, I was writing the notes and I'm like, damn, I didn't remember this.
Yeah, and for reference, we finished the campaign December 2019, so there's still plenty of episodes that will go out after these synopses.
Yes.
So Mary's kill shot was on the big guy, right?
Yeah, and I think, it was another instance of Lewis throwing somebody. And I had a spear, and I like...
Oh, yeah.
You had the lance of the big
thing. Oh, yeah. I took the... I'm sorry, Bilbo. I just hit him right in the face.
Oh, it's fine.
Lewis grabbed me, and I was holding the giant spear of the big were-rabbit boss. And he threw it, and we both had good rolls, which is really rare for me.
Yes.
And then I got the kill shot on the guy. And I was so proud.
And Kylie left it out. All right, what else? Does someone else have something they want to talk about?
One of my favorite moments was when we got Bodhi, the whale. And she...
Not a whale.
She asked if you want fame, fortune, or friendship. And, you know, we forced Adriel to pick friendship. And then when she came out of that pillar and it was just like this really good moment, she was like, no one has ever picked friendship. And I was like crying on the sidelines.
I'm pretty sure in like my notes from like while we were playing... I have, like, in parentheses, like, I'm literally crying or something like that.
It was just a really good moment.
It was.
I have a very good Anya moment. When we were first going down into the were-rabbit palace area, I was describing, and I think Kylie did a good job synopsizing how all the different structures were and how they were, like, really pretty and all that stuff until we found out that it was all fake. And we walk in, I describe all the elegant... structures, and Anya just goes, I nut.
Never mind. I was worried you're gonna like, spit water.
Yeah, I forgot
out
about that.
And then forever comment. In our group chat, her name, she changed the nickname of herself to Nuts at Architecture.
Oh, yeah, that's why you had that name. I had completely forgotten.
Love me some good architecture.
Oh, God.
That's also where I got some, like a gauntlet, right?
So it was, well, actually, it was during. I guess it was during the beginning of the next game, but I think that got left out of the synopsis as well. But you were trying to figure out what it was, because it was definitely something special, and Malara helped you figure out the gauntlet could transmute, because the rabbits could transmute stone, and the gauntlet was made out of stone. And the only successful thing you got it to turn into was like a long blade coming out of the gauntlet. And it cracked a little bit when you did that,
so you
knew that you would only be able to use it, I think, like it was five times, one for each finger kind of a deal.
Yeah.
So Norian, does anyone want to talk about how much they hate
Fuck
Norian?
Fuck that guy. That's all I have to say. Fuck that guy.
It was a collective answer. Fuck that guy.
Which I guess you guys did say when the synopsis was being read, so you know just how true that was.
Which is really ironic, because like from the very beginning, like he's supposed to be like this like heroic figure, like the like epitome of like the like knight in shining armor kind of thing. Like he's a paladin, right? So like
yes, the and fact he doesn't even use a weapon; he only uses his shield.
So like the fact that we all instantly were like "fuck this guy" is like really surprising.
He's not part of the guild that we were rivals with, though, right?
Didn't well,
the, what was the red ones?
The Onyx Rose.
No, the Red Oath. That was the one that Nixtern and Kef just started pummeling for reason.
Wait,
there was a reason,
and you got banned from their bar.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Yep, I don't know. I think you guys just wanted to start a fight.
Yeah, we definitely did.
Anya liked that bar.
That bar sucked. Well,
Anya likes every bar.
Yes. Anya's a drunk.
All right, so this was also, as you'll learn later, the riffs would end up being the main crux of the series, and this was the first time they came in contact with them. So I thought that was really fun. I enjoyed writing that synopsis because of that.
I really like going through all these, you know, quote unquote, old stories that we did, old chapters to the campaign. Because like you said, it's been almost 3 years. Ugh.
Yeah, and we literally just finished it last month.
Yeah. So like it's been a really nice like reminder, I think, of how like what we did and like why we made some choices that we made and stuff like that.
One of the episodes that we recapped today, there was like a strange little blurb that was like, oh, when everyone's paying attention to what like Gelleron and everything, all of them were doing, there's a mention that Malara did a perception check and noticed that there is this large woman with a pseudo dragon that was just kind of ignoring everything that was happening. That was actually the first appearance of Xenia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then she was looking for certain like magic items and got trapped down in the rabbit cave when you found her. But she was physically in the game before you met her.
Yeah, because I had that in my notes that like after we free them, she says that like she recognized us from the guild hall. But I didn't, for some reason, didn't include it in the synopsis because it didn't seem super relevant. But I had forgotten that like I had actually clapped eyes on her. In the
clapped
thing.
Eyes.
Oh, just, I'm done.
So for reference, Xenia was, if for some reason there was ever an event that someone wanted to run that was within this world, Xenia was my DM character that was just kind of floating around in there in case I ever needed her. Never did, but she made for some really good story points later on. So it was, I liked her. I think everyone else hated her for a little bit, though.
I didn't. Adriel did.
Oh, yeah. Just Adriel.
Real hard.
Always suspicious.
I really didn't trust her. I was like, you're suspicious. Mm-hmm. Yep.
She was super happy. Lots of tentacles.
Yeah, those
tentacles.
I don't
trust happy people, especially when they have tentacles.
Yeah, that was an interesting... she just, like, murdered the, like, hulked out, like, were-rabbit thingy with those tentacles.
She was badass.
She held him down, and then that was when Nixtern threw Adriel into
it. Yep, and you speared it. Wasn't it, like, through the eye or something like that? I don't remember.
I think I just said that you went straight through its body. Okay, I guess, are we done with recap stuff?
Yeah, I don't think I have anything to add.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening. You'll be able to find this podcast at halfwitsfailedcrits.com. You can send us an email to halfwitsfailedcrits@gmail.com. Hopefully, by the time you're listening to this, we will be in all of your normal podcatchers. And we have a Facebook and a Twitter, both of which are at failedcrits. Thank you to Kevin McLeod for the use of our theme song, Crunk Night. You can find the link to his SoundCloud in our show notes. All right, well, we look forward to seeing you guys for our final synopsis in the next episode, and then we will start launching our real episodes once they get edited. I think we have episodes 11 and 12 edited, but I might go back and try and make them better now that I've learned some more editing techniques since then. I guess just a heads up, the audio in those isn't great, but it was a lot of fun, and we were originally just recording this so that I had documentation of a campaign, because I'd run quite a few.
That never finished,
and I really just wanted to have a way to store our stories, and now we kind of want to share them. But once all of those are posted, or maybe even during, we are currently recording a space-themed game with all this new equipment that will hopefully sound great. So we hope that you stick with us through this not great audio quality stuff and get to know us so that you can enjoy our humor for the space game as well.
Woo. Fingers crossed.
Well, we still haven't found a good way to end this thing yet. We promise we will.
So bye.
Yeah, goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.